Entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. So with that, I'll let Walter take it from here. Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Walt. I'm a little low energy today, so I hope God kicks in and can take care of me here. Father, use me as an instrument of your mercy and your peace so I may help someone in the room today, and by doing so, help myself to stay sober another day. Amen. So after a fifth step, there's certain things you're supposed to do, but you know, you look at the first step and you say, okay, I'm powerless over alcohol. Every time I quit drinking, it didn't matter whether it was 5 minutes, an hour, a week, or a month, a year, that strange mental twist would come in my brain, and for some reason, it would be acceptable for me to take a drink of alcohol again. And it would really become my answer again. Alcohol was never my problem. And once I took that drink, it proved that I was powerless over alcohol because I didn't want to take the drink. And every time I got drunk, I had drunken behavior, God forbid, and that made my life unmanageable. You see? And at some point, I realized that even sober, I had some issues because I didn't like sober. I still don't like sober without AA. And so I thought, all this time I've been trying my whole life and couldn't do anything, so maybe God can restore me to sanity. That's what these guys are telling me. You know, and I do a third step, and I turn what concept of a higher power I had at that moment to turn it over, my life over to that. And it amazes me because so many people come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And they've been doing devastating things in their life. They've hurt people. They've destroyed other people's lives. They've done all of these things. And they come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they see all these people who have done the similar things that they have, but they're not doing them anymore. And they stick around for a while and they don't read the book and they don't get a sponsor. And they wonder why their life doesn't get a lot better. You see? They wonder about that. I see it all the time. I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. Because if I'm going to come here and I'm going to stake my life on something, I want to know what I'm staking my life on. Sorry, I might be weird, but that's me. I want to understand. And so, if I want to understand it, I need to do certain things, like I need to go to meetings and I need to chase the old timers and I need to listen to all their stupid stuff because they say weird things. You see? I need to read that big book and I need to break the binding on a 12 and 12 once in a while. And I need to do these things so I can educate myself enough so I know what the black part of those books says. Because if I'm going to stake my life on it, I don't want to take advice from somebody who's being sponsored by somebody who's being sponsored and none of them have read the book. You see? And that happens way too often in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then we say, geez, why are the sobriety rates so low? My God, imagine that. And so I have this concept of God and I turn my will and life over and then I got to do that inventory. Searching and fearless. Sure, sure. The first couple are in spite of fear. You see? I didn't want to meet me. I didn't like me. My whole life I've been running away from me. I never thought I was hip enough, slick enough, or cool enough. And I always had to fix the outsides to be better. Wow. Wow. in that fourth column. Oh, God, I hated that. The fourth column. Oh, boy. What was my part in all this anger? Holy cow. Holy cow. If you miss out on the ability of looking at that fourth column, you're missing everything Alcoholics Anonymous has to give you. Everything. Because that fourth column is the essence of what this whole program moving forward becomes part of. Because in that fourth column, we're supposed to come out of it, the 12 and 12 tells us, with a set of chosen ideals. A set of chosen ideals. You mean, when I look at the way I've lived in the past and all the anger, and then I look at my part in it and say, geez, I really want to be a little different than I was, and maybe I want to be like this different. And so we have these chosen ideals, right? But that doesn't mean we're going to live that way. It just means we want to be different. You see, and as we look at these chosen ideals, this is where we find the character defects and the shortcomings. Because if we don't know what a shortcoming or a character defect is in our lives, we don't know much. You see, I'll never forget, I went to my home group and I walked up to this old timer. His name's Jack Daniels. And I said, Jack, I said, what's a character defect, Jack? And he looked at me and said, son, stick around a while to get some character before you can get some defects. You see? You see, that's me. That's me. When I got here, I didn't understand qualities of life. I didn't understand good things about other people because the violence I had lived in had so far blinded me to goodness in life that, like, when I was in the halfway house, they gave me this assignment. I had to say 5 good things about everybody in the halfway house each day. I mean, I'm like saying they brushed their hair, they didn't smell. I had no idea. None. That's where I was. And so I had to stick around to find out what these chosen ideals I wanted were. And believe me, they've changed over time. You see? My sponsor used to say, boy, sit down and write your goals. What do you want to be at 5 years sober? What would be the biggest dream you could imagine? Write it down. So I did. I think I made it at about 9 months. You see? I couldn't imagine a big life. I had so many limiting beliefs, so many things that I put myself in jail with, so many things I stopped myself from doing because of this not understanding the person I wanted to be. And see, the whole thing is once you learn these chosen ideals, once you get this understanding of who you want to be in God's eyes, then we can find out what is the way we live. Where's the character defect of that? Where are my shortcomings for that person? You see, and I can start to look at those things and say, okay, God changed me to become this new man. Because I can't change myself. You see, too many people in the program walking around, I'm working on procrastination. Please. Please. I've never seen anybody get better from procrastination by working on it. I've never seen it happen. I've seen people get better from it for praying on it. But I've never seen people get better from working on it. You see, that's what the step says. You pray on it. That God will remove these things, not us. He didn't give us a process. He didn't lay out 8 different steps we got to do to get rid of a character defect. Bill wrote down that God will remove those things. That we do nothing but change the person we want to become. Right back to how it works, where it says if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. We have to constantly refine that statement. At 37 years sober, I constantly refine that statement because that statement is the statement that gives me the freedom to break through my limiting behavior. Hmm. Wow. You see, that's what the 12 steps gave a guy like me. Okay? You see, because limiting behaviors and these character defects, you just have to understand that you don't want to be that way no more. And it's amazing that as we do the footwork, God changes us. As I help a new drunk, God changes me. As I go to an extra meeting, God changes me. As I lead a meeting, God changes me. I don't do anything. I show up and just do what the old timers tell me to do. I'm a guy that came here homeless. Homeless. Morally bankrupt. Okay? The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous changed my life in a miraculous way. Nothing short of a miracle from God could have given me the ability to do the things that happened in my sobriety. And I had to break through a lot of limiting behaviors. Like, when I got sober, I didn't have a college degree. I thought I was uneducated. I couldn't do anything. And I go to my sponsor and say, what am I going to do? She said, started laughing. Well, it's easy. You go to college. Get educated. Learn something. I prayed about it for a year, and all of a sudden I got a scholarship to go to school. And I got a 4-year degree. And guess what? I got a job after that. You know? And it was a good job. I didn't like it much, but it was a good job. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that no matter where I am in the station of life, and I got sober on a scale of 1 to 100 at minus 20, you see, and I get to minus 5 and I think the world is wonderful. I'm excited. But see, God's got other plans for a guy like me, you know? I didn't do well my first few years of sobriety. I struggled at meetings. I didn't understand the rules of life. I just didn't understand. And as I went to a lot more meetings and finally graduated from college and I met a woman and got married and, you know, all of these things were limiting behaviors because I was, you know, 30 years old and thought I'd never get married and I just thought it was that way. And it was funny because, again, we limit our behaviors, you know. And here I am one night, I'm with two guys I sponsor and we said, oh, we're going to go to the comedy club. Great. And we're all going to invite somebody that no one else knew, and that person had to invite somebody that no one else knew also. Kind of fun. And I met my wife that night. You see? And we both knew at the same time. It was amazing. You know, and I didn't have much earning capacity when I got sober because of my character defects. I wasn't capable of working much of a job. I mean, I remember the first job I had sober was $4 an hour under the table making salads at a restaurant. 4 hours a day. I couldn't handle it. I remember calling my sponsor up saying, man, I'm going to kill everybody in the place. That's how angry I was. I was angry. And see, as I started working these steps, I started thinking about your personality is like a ball, and if it were perfect, it'd be smooth and round. And your character defects become like lumps on it and make it kind of hard to roll. You know? And mine was pretty lumpy. But as God made things better, I come to find out those lumps weren't really the issue. You see, the issue is fear. And we find that out in the fourth step too. You see, and I couldn't understand that when I got sober first because fear ran my life so strongly. I come from such a violent place that I was desensitized to anything that was fearful inside of me. And even to today, there are moments where things can build up and the fear will creep back in and I'll lash out at somebody. And I'm not proud of those moments, believe me. In my home group a couple weeks ago, I almost had a guy by the throat. You know? There was pretty good reason for it, but I wasn't proud about it. God hasn't removed that from me yet, so I'm kind of curious about that. You see? So removed a lot of things from me. I ain't gone to jail in a long time. That's pretty good. You know? So we get back to limiting behavior. So I get out of college and I get married, and life is wonderful. My wife and I buy a little house, and we're both working, and we got more money than we know what to do with at the time, you know, because we're young and it's fun and everything's cool. And we start having kids. You know, and I can tell you, the day my first child was born, there was a lot of fear in my life. You see? And I knew that I had to change, because the things that I was doing at that time weren't good enough for me again. And as I took the 12 steps again at that point, because I needed to look at me and who I was, I found there were many, many character defects and limiting behaviors and my part of things that I needed to look at again. Because I was in a different place in life. And I need to understand that sober, I need to have accountability in my actions if I want to get better in life. And so again, we start back to, wow, now that I got a wife, two kids, a house, a couple car payments, and all these other things going on, what do I want out of life again? You see? And I wanted to become very good at my profession. But I wasn't. And at the time, I was selling cars. And I wasn't very good. And so, again, I started praying about it. And I started, doors started opening up, and I got educational opportunities, and all of these things started coming my way. And within 3 years, I was the number one car salesman in Northeast Ohio. You see? God moved in my life. God moved so strongly. And guess what? I got fired from that job. Talk about character defects. I must have been such a tyrant at the time that they let go the best salesman in the city. I had a job within 10 minutes. But see, I got to look at my part of that. My part of that was, I had some issues. I didn't understand the rules to be that good. I didn't understand what was demanded of somebody in society at that point. And so I went on to the next place, and I went from a dealership where I could sell 35 and 40 cars a month to a dealership where the whole dealership sold 40 cars a month. You see? Well, again, our character defects and fear drive us in times. And our limiting behaviors say, well, geez, now I'm at a job where I can't make any money. And you can take not just a job, you can take any situation where you have this limiting behavior in your life and say, geez, I'm in this position and I can't do it. And so I'm stuck. And so what happens when you're stuck and you don't know what to do? Fear comes in, doesn't it? Fear comes in. And fear sometimes can be a big motivating factor in sobriety. But we have to realize that. And we have to understand whether we're operating out of fear or operating out of love. You see, and too often in my life, I've operated out of fear when I was younger. Not so much true today, but then it was. And so I go to this new dealership and I'm stuck, and I figure out a way to get in touch with all these customers and bring them to the dealership. And within 2 years, the dealership was selling 300 cars a month. And I was very successful there. And so successful that I wanted more, and I quit that job. Wife and two kids, and now we got a bigger house and bigger cars, and I walk away from my job and tell my wife, I'm going to start my own company with $300 and a laser printer, and you're going to quit your job and stay at home and raise the children. The ultimate American luxury, right? A wife that stays home to raise the children. It's the most expensive thing I can think of. And so she stayed home. And fear drove me. And I drove that company and made it huge and became very, very, very successful. And the world started throwing awards at me and compliments, and I started doing things like making the Fortune 5000 list, and I started doing things in sobriety that I never thought could ever happen for a guy like me. Because I broke through my limiting behaviors. I allowed God to change me. I kept reevaluating the statement. What do I want today? What's on the agenda today I want? How can I change my life to get what I truly desire in my heart? What's stopping me? The character defects. Are they shortcomings? Do I just not have those abilities? If I don't have those abilities, I need to find how to work around that. You see, and all of a sudden, things really came together for me. Now, this doesn't mean I was a nice guy, because I wasn't. I wasn't a nice guy. Yeah, my company sometimes grew 1,000% a year. And that stress brought a lot of fear on a guy like me. I had never even been a manager, let alone had 70 employees that worked 24/7. You see, I didn't know. Again, I didn't know none of these rules. The cool thing about my life is that consistently throughout sobriety, you people have been there for me. And you people have taught me how to do things. Guys like... there's this guy, Dale, who became one of my kind of idols. Dale was a Hell's Angel enforcer, pretty tough guy. And when I was in the halfway house, he got a job mopping floors at Lubrizol, third shift. They hired him. He was amazed he got a job, right? 2 years ago, Dale retired from Lubrizol. Now, you guys probably all heard of Lubrizol, right? He was international director of IT for that company. That's God. That's God. How does that happen? There's no way. You see, if you saw a movie of it, you wouldn't believe it. You see, my other buddy, Jerry Campbell, he killed his wife in a laundromat with a butcher knife. He was on death row in Canada for 2 years, and they commuted his sentence and expedited him back to America. God, moving in his life. He became one of the finest members Lake County, Ohio's ever seen in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got the pleasure to take him to his last lead. You see, A taught me how to live, and A's taught me how to die. Okay? And A's taught me how to live with death. All of these things can be character defects and shortcomings and be problems. And, you know, we're always going to have these things. But the beauty is that we have this program and this hope that we can break these limiting behaviors because we see other people doing it. And if they can do it, I can do it. And it's so important. That's why we need these meetings so much, is that we can come here and get exposure to greater things and get exposure to God's miracles happen amongst us. And that's the power that I want, you see. That's the power I need. I need to see people just doing things that you can't even believe they're doing. You see, and that's the Alcoholics Anonymous I love. He's given me everything. And you know, at this point in my life, the steps are a little different for me because today I operate a lot out of love. And my limiting behaviors sometimes today, or when this fear creeps in so strongly, and I don't know the rules at my age. You see, because I still want to think I'm 30 years old. You know, I'm in the gym 2.5 hours a day today because I don't want to be old anymore. You see, 5 years ago, after my wife had died, I quit living. I became a recluse for many years. I didn't go out of the house. I didn't go to meetings. I was all alone, and I got bad. Mentally, terrible. All of the things kept creeping in. The fear came back. The sadness. I didn't even want to leave my house. You know, and one day I woke up and I wanted something different. One day I woke up and said, the doctors, they made me worse. And I went to the hospital and it took 2 weeks to get off all their meds. And you see, I came back to meetings and I came back weighing 460 pounds and not even able to walk to the back of Walmart without sitting down. See, you people didn't tell me to leave. You didn't say, boy, after all you did before and all you said, now you quit on us and leave? Nobody said that to me. Everybody said, come back. And I think a lot of old timers get away from the meetings and they forget. And they get in this pain and then they feel so embarrassed to come back. You see, that embarrassment was really hard for me. And so 2 years ago, I started going to the gym because I hurt my back and I had a little bit of physical therapy, and I remembered that the swimming pool felt awful good to me. And I started swimming every day and I joined the Y. And you see, again, I went back to my steps and I worked the steps and I read the books and I did everything Alcoholics Anonymous told me to do. And I started for praying for God to, again, give me something I wanted. Because at the time, I didn't want to live. You know, when I... About that time, my youngest son came home from college because COVID hit. And we got to spend the next 2 years together. It was so good for me. You know, because I got in the gym and I started losing weight and I've lost 140 pounds now and I feel great and I've got a long ways to go yet. I probably got another 60, 70 pounds to lose. But, you know, I feel so good that I'm back working part-time after 12 years of not working because I just didn't want to be part of the world anymore. I took a little part-time job selling paint at a Sherwin-Williams store for 12 bucks an hour. It doesn't even pay my utilities, okay? But it's fun because I get to be around a bunch of young people. I think the oldest guy in the store is 28, you know? And there's me. I'm the old guy. And it's kind of interesting to be around all kinds of nice people all the time. And these are decent kids. They're not drug addicts or drunks or anything. And it's nice to be around them. You know, and the fact is that what I've really got to be grateful for is that through this process of 6 and 7 for me, it's allowed me to teach my children and mentor my children so that they don't have to operate out of fear every day. And that they can be good men and be good in the community they live in. You see. My youngest son spends his vacations traveling, working on handicapped adult camping sites with his fraternity. And even still does it now after he's out of school. And, you know, just phenomenal, man. My oldest son, he's 28. He lives out in Reno, and he works for Sherwin-Williams also, and he's a quality manager there and has 15 employees and oversees about $1 billion a year in paint. I mean, just, I can't even imagine my kids. I'm homeless, drunk, cocaine addict. My kids doing that. There ain't a God? Are you going to stand here and tell me there's no God? What do I owe? What do I got to do? Drive to Erie? Take half a day off work? Drive to Erie? Speak to you guys? What do I got to do? Where do I sign up? I'll do that every day. Every day I'd do it. AA's been so good to me and good to my children. Heck, my youngest one graduated from Toledo. It was funny, he went there for 3 years to be an engineer. Toledo's a great engineering school. He called me up one day and he was just frantic. He said, "Dad, for weeks I've been upset." And I said, "I knew you were off." He said, "No, I've been really bad." He said, "I don't want to be an engineer. I want to be an accountant." I said, "Great. At least you know what you want to do." He thought I was going to be so mad. So we got another 3 years of school in. But that's okay. He's working for Sherwin-Williams now in the auditing department down in Texas, and he just loves it. It's the job he was meant to be. He turned down PricewaterhouseCooper. He turned down Ernst & Young to come to work for Sherwin-Williams. You see? Because that's where he wanted to be. Again, what do we want? It all comes down to that simple statement. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, take certain steps, right? It says we got to go to any length to get it. It's great. Anyways, I've talked enough. I think I'll open it up for questions.
Thanks, Walt. Is there anyone on Zoom or in the rooms that has a question for Walt?
Hi, I'm Rick. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rick. Hello.
You know, what really impresses me is being a car salesman in that, and this is an honest program, and as far as I know about car salesmen, I known a couple, and one of them was my brother-in-law, and he couldn't handle it because he had to lie to customers and stuff like that, you know, to sell the car, you know, do whatever he could to do it. It impresses me that, you know, being in the program and that, and have to set aside the way the program operates and selling cars and everything, and I just wanted to know how you were able to do that, you know, trying to keep, you know, your motives aside from doing a deal with a car, you know, to get the car sell and everything, and it had to be a little stressful and deceiving in some way. Trying to put you down for the occupation that you had at the time, but we do whatever we have to, you know. But I do know that car salesmen, you know, they have motives and they have to make their sales, make their quota or whatever, or you're out the door. So it impresses me that you were like a top salesman and everything else like that. And how that did it conflict in your sobriety or your program in any way?
No, not at all. I didn't ever do anything that wasn't that I held to my values, and that's why I was so good. I wouldn't lie to anybody, I wouldn't cheat anybody, I wouldn't steal from anybody. And I don't believe profit is a bad word. Okay? I go to work to make money just like everybody else goes to work to make money. And as long as I don't lie to anybody, cheat anybody, or steal from anybody, I sleep very well at night. You see, I haven't taken a paycheck from anybody except for in the last few weeks since 1991. I worked for myself. I took care of myself. That's what AA taught me. You see. And that's what I believe in, is that if I tell the truth and I do just what my mentor taught me to do. My mentor said, if you help enough other people get what they want, you will always get what you want. And I believe that.
You're welcome.
That's okay. Call me a thief. Call me a liar. I'm all of those things, you know? I am. It's no big deal.
I know how much alcoholics and drug addicts can be.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks, Rick.
Carolyn Alcoholic, thanks, Walt, for your share, particularly heartfelt today, and condolences to you on the loss of your wife. I'm an old-timer. I'm married to a guy in AA, and so we pull each other off the couch or out of the basement or whatever to get to a meeting. But how did you get out of the house? Could you expand a little bit on, did you call somebody you knew? Did somebody call you? Did you just...
No.
What happened?
Strictly divine intervention. Strictly. I just came to a place where I wanted something different. I was not willing to accept my life anymore. Just like I've come with every character defect and every shortcoming I've ever come to, I just got sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick. I wanted to learn how to live, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. And I was willing to put my embarrassment aside. You see, because I don't matter. Everything that's in this thinking, when I'm operating out of fear, doesn't do me any good. It never ends up real good. And so when I trust God and I can trust people around me, I do much better. And so when I came back to meetings, I came back and I started doing what I was supposed to do. And I had to learn some humility. I mean, hell, the steps are pride-busting and ego-deflating. They're not supposed to be a joyride. You see? They're supposed to be a harsh learning environment. The 12 and 12 says, the minute we make a serious attempt to probe our character defects, there are liable to be severe and violent reactions. Imagine that. You see, that's what stops a lot of people, is that severe and violent reaction. It stops, it's a limiting behavior. It stops you cold. And if you're going to listen to yourself and you listen to those limiting behaviors, you're always going to be limited. You're always going to be fighting against it. You see? And until you can look at the other side and say, I want what's over there more than where I'm at now, if the pain's not great enough, you're not going to move. And that's where getting sensitive to your soul is. I mean, my sponsor called me a concrete-coated marshmallow. You see? Because I couldn't feel the sensitivity in my soul. I couldn't feel the goodness within me. Because I had covered it up so harshly to be able to live the life I was living. And it took so long to unravel that. So long. Thank you.
Thank you, Walter. One question. Have you ever had sponsees that were working the steps? Did you ever have any that you told them, you got more than that to work? Like when they're laying out their defects, have you ever said, no, you don't have them all? Because sometimes we can see in others what they can't see in themselves.
Well, exposing someone to themselves is sometimes a good thing. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever likes it. You see? And so, in my older days now, I try not as much to do that. I mean, I used to sponsor with people by their collar with their feet off the ground. Okay? I don't do that anymore. I've learned you can't beat somebody into sobriety. Okay? So, everybody's got their own time. And everybody has their own character defects that they live in. It's kind of like, there's a story about this little bird and it's going to fly south, but it waits too long and it gets caught in an ice storm. And as it's in this ice storm, it gets covered with ice and it gets heavier and heavier and it finally crashes to the ground. And as this bird crashes to the ground, it falls into a pile of cow poop that's fresh. And it's warm and it's nice and it thaws them out. You see? Everybody has their own pile of cow poop they're in. And my sponsors told me this story one time, that we all have our own crosses to bear. Okay? And my sponsor said, boy, if you went up to Peter and said, can you let me in the cross factory because I don't like the cross I got to bear. And you go into the cross factory and you're looking around and there's millions of crosses everywhere. And when you come out, you bring your own. You see, because it feels best to you. Because you understand the rules. To break your limiting behaviors, to move ahead in life, you have to understand that there are a new set of rules you have to learn. And that's scary for most people. Most people can't do that. I've been very fortunate in my life to understand that there's more in life, that we can get whatever we want in life. We just have to want it. You see? I wanted my boys to know the world. I wanted my boys to travel. Guess what? By the time they were in ninth grade, both of my boys had gone on these trips called People to People. I don't know if anybody ever heard of them, but President Eisenhower started these trips. And they send our children to other countries, and their children come here. And it's like a three-week trip. And his whole idea was that if our children met their children, there'd be less wars. Some little way he did. But my boys got to go to Italy, to Greece, to Australia, to Europe, all of these things when they were children. And it allowed them to know they were safe in the world, that they could do anything by themselves. And it's just amazing that we get to do that here. That we have that chance. Heck, at 65, I ain't done yet. I feel like right now I'm writing a new chapter in my life. I'm just getting my feet underneath me again now. You see? And I'm not done. There's a lot more I want in life again. And all of a sudden, you know, that's what this last 2 years has been about. I have focus. I have discipline. I do all the things that I've been doing in AA. But I now do it on my personal self. You see? I watch what I eat. I do my workouts. I'm staying healthy. I keep myself out of jackpots. I do all the things I'm supposed to do. I live a pretty boring life right now. But you see, it's moving me to a new dimension. It's making me feel young again. When I walk, I don't hurt with every step. You see, when I wake up in the morning, it doesn't take me 15 minutes to get out of bed anymore. Okay? All of these things are just amazing at how God has changed me. And this is what the steps are about. This is what AA is about. This is what my sponsors who are long gone all taught me, is that you can have anything you want at any time you want it. You've just got to realize that you want it more than anything else in the world. And you'll get it. Because AA will teach you how to get it.
Anyone else? Jeff.
Thanks, Walt. You mentioned a couple times the fourth column in your fourth step. My question is, what do you have the people, the guys you work with, what do they do with that information in terms of the sixth step and things like that?
Well, in the fourth column, if you define your part in all of this stuff, you can start to see patterns of what kind of person you are. It will become fairly obvious at points. And as you do more and more four steps, you'll start to see more and more patterns they'll develop. But what happens with that four step to me is that when they look at that, they say, this is who I am, this is who I want to be. So what's preventing me from being there is a character defect, is the way I act. not a shortcoming, which means I just don't have the capacity to do that. Like I couldn't do quantum physics today because I haven't read the books yet. Okay? That's, to me, a shortcoming. A defect is something like I get angry at somebody or something. You know, those types of things. So when we look at it, we start to define who we are. We take that to God, and then we use the eighth and ninth step to make our amends and try to heal our souls. Not anybody else's. Our souls, because we need to be connected to the world again. And that fear and all those resentments block us from being able to get to God. Okay? And so as we take that fourth column, it really defines the whole rest of our program, in my opinion. Okay? And so that's why I feel it's so, so important. It's critical. And unfortunately, so many people go to those little study guides and all of this stuff that I'm not staking my life on. You see, I'll stake my life on the black part in the big book. So, that's what I do with the fourth column. You're welcome.
Anyone on Zoom or anyone else in the rooms? Going once, going twice.
Sold.
Thanks again, Walt. Let's give him a round of hands.